The question that was raised is a regular and average person, if he, when he's making a choice between good and bad, is that Bechira? My answer is as follows. My answer is the act of Bechira is as commonly experienced rare. I don't say it has to be rare, but it is rare. But if a person is confronted with an avera, the question is, if he weighs the pros and cons of the whole situation, like Chazal say, Alkein Yomar Emotional Bo Cheshbon, and he really makes a Cheshbon, Schar Mitzvah Keneged Hafseido, Schar Avera Keneged Hafseido. So then, if he does that, then it's an act of the free will. But if he just perfunctorily controls himself or something, that's not an act of Bechira. So Bechira comes as a very rare kind of phenomenon in our society, at any rate. Okay, but that's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is my premise is that all that the thinkers in the area and all the works that are written on the free will, is there free will, is there no free will, they made one error. The error is they failed to define precisely what is meant by free will. They overlooked the basic definition. They overlooked. As a matter of fact, I was reading recently Ernest Jones has an essay on free will. So he says that free will and Freud said the same thing, that free will, we experience free will in areas that aren't important to us. Like, should I tie my shoes? Or we feel we have free will, like about tying our shoes or doing simple things. But when it comes to bigger areas of life, he says that we feel compelled. You know, like he quotes these great people that did these great things. He says they always said, "I'm compelled to do it." You know, he says, or like it's like falling in love. He says where you feel compulsion, you don't feel that it's an act of free will. Yeah, but that's, you see, he's talking about a person who has never experienced what we're talking about is free will. And on the contrary, we say an act of tying the shoes is not free will at all. That's just a matter of mechanics and dynamics of the mind. That's all it is. That's not really free will. The experience of free will that we're talking about is only an experience you could have if you know what it is and if you're raised in a world of chachma. That's why Chazal say, that's why Bichanan said, until the day of Torah was given, there was no free will. Today you have free will, Moshe Rabbeinu said. Because why? Because you can only have free will if you have knowledge. If you don't have knowledge, you can't have free will. So what the world defines as free will, and all these discussions about free will are really nonsensical because they fail to see what the definition of the free will is. That's where the mistake is. They don't know. They're not talking about what real free will is. An example of free will, I think the best mashal is like the Targus mashal is the most powerful emotion of love. Let's say a person is in love with a woman and he's completely overpowered by the love. But in his mind he knows this is the worst thing for him. His intelligence, his mind says this is going to lead to my total destruction. So he has the powerful emotions on one side and his mind is on the other side and says that this is going to ruin him. Now that's where free will comes in. That would be a good example of free will. Okay, the most powerful emotions on one side and the mind, the intellect telling you on the other side, this is not going to lead to your benefits. It is going to lead, on the contrary, to your dissolution, to your destruction. So that's where you have free will. Okay, do you understand it? Okay. So I was reading this essay by Ernest Jones, the student of Freud. And as I said, I mean, if you read the essays in this area, the problem is they fail to define precisely what they mean by free will. They just talk about it loosely, as if it's something that you feel. You have to define the problem. But he raises an interesting question. He says like this. He says that it's amazing, but you have the greatest minds are involved in this debate. Greatest minds, Leibniz and Hume and Spinoza and the biggest philosophers are involved in this whole debate. Some say, yeah, they argue pro and con. It's an argument which there's an unbelievable amount of literature on. And you have great minds in one section, great minds in another section. But he says like this, he raises a question, he raises a point, he says, it doesn't make any difference, he argues. Because the people that don't believe in free will, they live the same way like the people that believe in free will. Which is a good tiner. So basically, his tain is it's dvar shel mavakach. In other words, like, who cares? You say, what difference does it make? What are you going to say? So I'm going to lie down and die? I mean, you're going to have to do something anyways. It's a very good point. But I want to mention something with regard to that point. And that is that the term, the concept free will has to be divided into there are two different types of free will. When we talk about free will, we're talking about two different things. And one does make a practical difference. In other words, and this is what the Rambam talks about. The Rambam's talking about free will is not the free will the moderns are talking about, the modern thinkers. There's a concept of not having free will, which is a concept of predestination, which means like this, that it's already been predetermined whether you're going to be poor or rich, or whether you're going to be virtuous or not. Now, that concept is a specific kind of determinism. Now, if you accept, that's the determinism against which the Rambam talks. In other words, that the ancients believe that you're born under a certain star, you're going to be a rich man. You're born under another star, you're going to be a poor man. Okay? So that kind of predestination is a kind of that's one kind of predestination. There's another kind of predestination where you say that the volition of your will itself is predetermined. In other words, and you're not saying that. They're not saying that you were born to be poor or born to be rich. Mm-hmm. It's just saying that whatever you do, your internal life, your mental life, is all predetermined. Those are two different things that have to be distinguished. Okay. Now the first kind of there's two kinds of determinism. Okay. This is important. Now, Ernest Jones' comment that it makes no difference whether you're a determinist or not is only in the second kind of determinism, not in the first, because in the first I could show you people that it makes a big difference in their lives. There are people that believe that whether I'm rich or poor is already predetermined, okay? And therefore, they say that there's no sense in me going out and exerting an effort and becoming a big entrepreneur and trying to make money. Because it's all, whatever's going to happen is going to happen to me. If I'm supposed to be rich, I'm going to win the lottery. So these people sit at home, basically, and exert very little effort in their financial matters, you see. Now, the same thing will be true in the religious sphere as well. See, he's overlooking. You have to differentiate between these two types of determinism. If a person will maintain that whether I am going to, there is a Christian philosophy that maintains that whether you're going to be good or evil is all predetermined. If that's the case, there's no reason for me to really... You see, it's based upon a simplistic idea of good. Like, tomorrow morning I'll get up, I'll be a good person. Everything inside me is going to change. All my evil desires are going to vanish. You see? If you believe in that, then you will never exert an effort on perfecting yourself. And you're not going to believe in a whole system of perfection. What you're going to do is just wait. That's it. You see? So he's wrong in saying that determinism, it makes no difference whether you're a determinist or not. In the financial sphere, you can see it very clearly. But the same thing is true in the religious sphere. But in the religious sphere, you have to, you know, it's a little more abstract. So yeah, you have to... The application is a little more, is a little harder to see, but it's the same concept. It's this very same concept. That kind of determinism is the determinism that Rambam talks against. He's talking against the determinism that a person is born under a certain star and is going to be rich or poor. Not true. It's up to you. You want to stay home, do nothing, you'll be poor. You want, if you use your intelligence and you go out there and you do something, you can become rich. Okay. Makes a big difference whether you're determinist or not. Same thing is people who believe, who are fatalists. I had a balabas who was a fatalist. He was very sick. He had like 3 heart attacks. And then I spoke to him. I said, look, maybe there is a rabbi. I'm a fatalist. If I'm going to die, I'm going to die. That's it. So he did nothing. Okay? You see, that is a determinism. That's one brand of determinism. But now there's another kind, and that affects a person's life. Now there's another kind of determinism in which you say that no matter what I do, and no matter what goes on in my mental life is determined anyways. That kind of determinism, Ernest Jones is right. It doesn't make any difference, because what are you going to do? A person has to live with volition. Volition's a part of the will, is a part of existence. You can't get around it. The only question is a theoretical one. Is this will determined, or is this will something which is undetermined? Okay? So you have to say, I think it's important to distinguish. And it's important when you read the Rambam in this area, he's not discussing the problem of free will, that the modern question of free will is not the one the Rambam's talking about. He's talking about a different problem. He's talking about the problem of the free will that I mentioned before. Determinism, meaning to say that it's specific determinism. Okay? But he's not talking about the determinism, the question of the determinism of mental life. That's a different question. Okay. Yeah, Ernest Jones points out an interesting thing. He points out the ones, he says the people who believe in determinism, you'll always find that they always contradict themselves. Because no sooner do they say they believe in determinism, and they tell you that you should do such and such. As if you have the free will to do it. You see? A real determinist can hardly exist, because a real determinist cannot say anything to you. But I say like this. I say we brought out a point last time, and I said like this. I said that a person that cannot that the problem of free will is the mistake that the whole question of free will is, and this is like the physicist, for instance. He quotes the physicists talk about free will, Rutherford, because they when they discover that the atom is that the atom that the specific the atom. What happens to an atom in specific cannot be determined, but only in a general way can you determine how many, in terms of statistically, there's determination, but in specific there is no determination. So then they got very excited. They say, well, you see that there's such a thing, there may be such a thing as free will, because there are no determinants. So they all argue, no, that's ridiculous, because you can't go from physics to the mind. The reason why it's ridiculous is because the concept that we have by free will, what we're saying is that man is not a part of the world of physical law. That's exactly what, so what do you bring me a proof from the world of physical law? It's absurd. The whole thing's absurd. Because we're saying that, as a matter of fact, we said that if a person doesn't understand the concept of free will, he doesn't understand the concept of God. Because the concept of God is that there is a being who you cannot apply the terms and the conditions and the causations of the created world. There's a being behind the created world that is not the created world and is not subject to the laws of the created world. Okay. If a person cannot conceive that concept, okay, so then he can't conceive of God. Then the idea of God he can't conceive of. The same exact thing, the same exact idea is being stated when we say that man is free will. We mean, you could even justify the Kabbalistic phrase of Chelek Elokam Imal, which means that man, when God gave man a soul, the soul is not something which comes from the rest of, even though it is created, but it is not subject to the laws of the created world. Okay? Now, if you can't conceive of that concept, you see, then you can't conceive of the idea of God. Okay? So, it means it's a unique phenomenon, and it is not determined, it is not subject to the deterministic laws of the rest of the created world. Even though it's created, but it's created in a special way, a different kind of a thing. Now, if you can't conceive of that idea, you see, then you can't conceive of the whole concept of free will, and also you can't conceive of the idea of God. Okay? Now, I would like to just, I know it's an abstract point. See, once you understand that point, you see that all the arguments of these people, the physicists and psychologists, they're all completely a waste of time, because they're all trying to say free will within the created world, when that's not what the definition of free will is. But let me elaborate a little further on it. Let's take an example. You have a determinist is arguing with you. Okay, I want to show you what it means. Because, you see, I want to show you that what Jones said is not completely true. He said it makes no difference. I say it does make a difference. Okay? I'll tell you why it makes a difference. does make a difference functionally. There he's right. But it makes a difference conceptually and metaphysically, which will affect your philosophy of life and which will affect the way you live. Okay? Let's say you're arguing with a determinist. Okay, what would I say if I were arguing with a determinist? I would refute him very easily. Or at least I'd frustrate him very easily. What I would say to him is simply this. You maintain that determinism is the correct view. That's the truth of the matter. Everything's determined. That view, do you realize that a person can hold a view even though it's not rational? Is that possible? Yes, right? Okay. Now, the view that you have about this very view that you have about determinism is not something that you chose because your mind tells you that it's the truth. You had to choose this view. You see? So, therefore, you cannot say that this view is correct. I mean, you could say it, but all, the only reason you're saying this is you're just determined. This has been predetermined. You see? What does this show? What does this argument show? What does the argument show? It's not just simply a refutation of the determinist. You see, the determinist can't say that this is the truth. Why? Because he's determined, so he has to believe it whether it's the truth or not. It could very well not be the truth, but he's forced to believe it. He has no choice. You see? What's that? He can say anything he wants. He can say anything he wants. But there is no, he cannot say objectively that this is truth. Because whatever view he's going to hold has been determined, this, including this view of determinism. So he really had no choice in the matter. You see? What? You see? Yeah, the only thing he could say is that I maintain that it's been determined because it's really true. But then we say, but you have to, yeah, that was determined too that you say that. That too was determined. You understand? So it's an endless thing. Can't get out of it. Okay. But what does this show, really? What I really want to bring out is what does this show? It shows you something. It shows you that determinism of internal mental life means that man, as I said last time, that man is nothing more than a chafter. That's what it means. Because it means any view that he maintains, even if he espouses the truth, he's no different than a machine that happens to say true things, false things, whatever it might be, you see? But he is simply a chafter. He's just an object that even when he echoes the truth, is just an echo of the truth. It's not something that there's no gavra that has seen an idea and is influenced by the idea. There's no gavra. He's purely a chafter. You see? That's what Yadus is against. See, Yadus maintains that Adam, man, is a gavra. He's a unique gavra. What makes him a gavra? The fact that God removed his essence, which is of a different type, from the world of the laws of nature. You see, he's been removed from the world of the laws of nature, insofar as his soul is concerned. And that's what makes him a gavra. So therefore, when a person says that I believe this is true, it means that he's being influenced by the truth, and he's made a decision based, he has the capacity to make a decision based upon the fact that he's seen that something is true. He's a gavra. It's not predetermined. So what I want to show you is that the concept of free will is really a question of what man is. It's a question. The question is whether man is a unique gavra or whether man is a chafta. And that makes a big difference in a person's... That makes a big difference. Jones is wrong on that one. It doesn't make a difference functionally. It makes a big difference in how a person perceives what an Adam is, and that affects the whole quality of his life. If man is a chafter, so then his philosophy of life has to be quite different than the idea that man is a god. His pursuits are going to be different. He doesn't have the same concept of Adam. That makes a very big difference. Over there, I wouldn't agree. See, Jones, the reason why Jones said that is because Jones didn't perceive, he didn't perceive the profundity of the problem. You understand what I mean? He just thought that the free will is to tie your shoelaces or not. You see, he didn't perceive the profundity of the problem. So it's true, if that's where you're going to limit the question of free will to tying your shoelaces, you're right. Everybody's going to tie their shoelaces whether they believe in free will or not. You see, if that's the kind of free will you're talking about. But when you perceive the profundity of the question of free will, you will see that it will make a big difference. It's like saying, does it make a difference if a person believes in Yadis or he believes in Labdul in Christianity? Of course, it makes a big difference. Tremendous difference. His whole life is going to be different, you see? How you define yourself, how you perceive yourself. So what Yadis says is that when a person argues a point, he's not arguing it because his soul was predetermined. He's capable of being influenced by truth, by ideas. You see, that's basically what Yad is saying. That man is a gavra. He's not a chefta. That's what it is. You have to consider the idea of gavra. Okay. Well, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to show you that refutations, all the questions against free will, are naught. Why? Because they're based on an assumption, like I said last time, which is that man is a chefza. But that's the very point. He is not the point of free will. He's a gavra. Once you say he's a gavra, then the questions of how could man have free will all vanish, because you can't bring support from the world, because that world is the world of chefza. It's not the world of a gavra. You see? So there is no question. It's impossible to lodge a question against the premise of free will. If you really understand what free will is, it's impossible. It's unassailable. It's unassailable. It's just as impossible as it is. Once science recognizes a creation, and there's something beyond creation, just as any scientist will tell you that once you say that, that means you've set the limits for science, because all your science is based on the created world. You can't go on there, and then there's a line you can never go beyond that line. That's it, because now you're talking about a different world. All your knowledge is based upon this, but there's something beyond that's responsible for this. You can't go into the beyond. What tool? You have no tools. Nothing. You lost all your tools. That's why science refused to accept the idea of a creation. And they insisted that the world is a steady state. It's funny, I was reading in Jones, one of your early essays, where he says that's clear to the scientific world. It was before the Hubble's telescope. So he says, yeah, it's just a religious notion. Creation is religious nonsense. We know in science that there's no such thing as creation. Funny to read that now at this point, but the point I'm making is that the position of free will is unassailable, intrinsically unassailable. It's as unassailable as the idea of God, because the same thing happens, of course, with people who are not intellectually developed and ask questions: where did God come from? They don't understand that the very idea of God is the answer to that question. You follow what I'm saying? Okay, it's the same kind of thing. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. So somebody asked a question. The question was raised that it may be unassailable, but it's also unassailable to say there are ghosts. Now, the answer to your question is that when a person says there are ghosts, what they're doing is they're positing things that there's no basis for. Okay? And I could posit anything and there's no basis for. But free will is a question that you must encounter. It's a question that you must encounter.
In other words,
No. But it means to say that you can't. I could not discuss ghosts. You understand? But you can't. You cannot not discuss free will. Free will is an intrinsic question: is it or not? So it's not. That's not the same kind of thing. In other words, you could say to me that just because it's unassailable doesn't mean that it is so. That's correct. I agree with you on that. But I'm saying it's not the same thing as the person posits. It means you have to come. There's a question: is it A or is it B? You're going to have to make a decision, A or B. Okay? So, position A, what I'm saying is position A is unassailable. But you have to make that decision. I mean, the decision you have to make one way or another. I mean, you have to come to some kind of conclusion. Ghosts, you don't have to make a conclusion, but you have to discuss them. It's positing something that just doesn't exist. But here's a question which you have to come to some kind of conclusion, one way or the other. Now, Yadis tells us through Nevuah that man is a gavra. That's what Yadis tells us through Nevuah. Okay? Is it provable logically? It's a different question. That's a different question. All I'm saying is that anyone that embraces Torah, that knows that is convinced of the veracity of Yadus, knows that the will have to accept the concept of free will, because that's the Yisod Yadus. Okay. I will say that what Rabbi Myers mentioned has a lot to do with it. What we said last time, namely the fact that man is capable of perceiving something which is completely beyond the physical, has nothing to do with the physical, and yet his mind can perceive it as real, shows you that the human being is in a dimension which is beyond the physical phenomena. Mind shows you that man is in a different dimension. That cannot be denied. Okay? That he's different. That he's qualitatively differentiated. Which means that the argument, you see, the arguments of the determinists are always based upon the physical world. Why should man be different? He's a part of the physical world. That's always the same argument. See, that argument is false, and when you think into it, you will see that the preponderance of evidence is just the contrary. That the mind of man shows you that he's made up of something which is beyond the physical. Beyond the physical. To apply the restraints and the laws of the physical to him is really an intrinsic absurdity. Okay? One of those laws being causality, so therefore there's no reason to apply the law to man. I would add further as follows, that to say in that light, to say that man is deterministic would be like positing ghosts. Why? Because there is no reason, you have no reason to posit the law, these laws that you find over here, to man. So therefore you should not posit causation. So on the contrary, if you posit causation, what you're doing is, you are doing something which is, that would be like positing ghosts. You're saying that this should we find one sphere which has certain properties, and you're trying to apply what you find in one sphere to another sphere which you recognize is completely different. So there's no basis for the application. If there's no basis for the application, so then there's no reason to say to apply the concept of causation. Without the concept of causation, there is no determinism. So determinism is really, if you're talking about Occam's razor, Occam's razor means you always apply the least. You never apply more than you see. That means to say you can't unjustly take something from one sphere and apply it to another sphere if that sphere doesn't warrant it, because you don't see that. So the determinism is based upon what? Is based upon the property of causation. And the property of causation I see in the physical sphere, but now I'm dealing with something which is obviously beyond the physical sphere, and therefore there is no logical, it would be illogical to apply the property from the physical sphere to that other sphere. And once you don't apply it, then you have free will. Then you have free will. Because free will means no causation. As a matter of fact, the concept of free will should not be and here's a reason I think that these thinkers got involved in these mistakes, these errors, is because they didn't realize one thing. They didn't realize that the concept of free will should not be a positive concept. Because you're talking about, see, it should not be a positive concept. Why? Because a positive concept can only be something that you know. It's like God is not a positive concept. God is only negative knowledge. You see, it's positive in a sense, but it's not positive. In one sense, it's positive, but in another sense, it's not. That's why the Rambam says God is all negative knowledge. You see, the same thing is true over here. You cannot have a positive idea of free will. The reason why they made this mistake is because they were looking for, they associated with the word freedom. Free! Everybody knows what free is. You think you know what free is because you have a certain feeling. But that's not the philosophical concept of free will. What you should say really is, by free will, you should define it negatively, meaning that it is not deterministic. It does not share the laws that we see with regard to the created universe. That's what you should say free will is. What is it? You can't say what it is because you've never seen it. Your mind can only study the created world. You understand what I mean? You're limited with your mind. So therefore, when you say free will, that I think is part of the problem. Everybody try to understand free will in a positive way. They try to go with the idea of freedom. Well, everybody knows that. You want to be free. You want to be free? That's free will. And then do it free will. You want to be free is another emotion. That's not free will. The pure philosophical abstract definition of free will should be stated in the negative. It means the soul of man, belonging to a different sphere, cannot, does not justify, cannot tolerate the property of causation which is found in the sphere of the created. It's not under causation. What it is, don't even try to imagine what it is. You can't, then you're just going to go into the world of imagination. Then you'll be the same thing. They're trying to imagine free will. You can't say what it is. You can only say that there are no deterministic laws with regard to the soul. Okay? You understand what I'm saying? Just like God cannot be understood in the positive, because there's nothing from reality, from the created world, that you could take to use. El misa damyuni ve'eshve yom ha'kadosh. There's no way to compare God with anything that we know as positive knowledge. Well, we can only say we have an idea of existence, which when you abstract all the properties that we have in our mind associated with existence, there remains a pure idea. That is the idea of God's existence. Okay? But you can't say, you cannot have God in a positive way. God in a positive way ultimately is Avodah Zarah. Ultimately is Avodah Zarah, because it's an attempt to project something onto the idea of God. That's Avodah Zarah. Same thing is true of free will. The mistake is that they think there are two positive sides to the question. There's a question of free versus not free. No, there's not a question of free will. There's a question of deterministic laws, and then there's a question of absence of application of these deterministic laws. What that is, we can't know what it is. You can't know what it is. It's impossible. It's just the absence of deterministic laws.
Hello? You see?
So actually, no, I'm glad you raised that question. So actually, the question that was raised is shows you, on the contrary, that to maintain determinism is not logical. That is like ghosts. That's like positing ghosts. To maintain free will is very logical. It's good. You see, that's why I would say, it always bothered me why the Ramban introduced Bechira into the concept of Tzelem Elokim. I mean, most Rishonim say Chachma. Ramban admits Chachma too, of course. Without Chachma nothing, but he says Bechira also. But now I see why. Because Bechira really makes man into a Gavra, which is really what differentiates him, and that's the whole story in Bereishis. That man is differentiated from the rest of the created world. That's why you even have a second parsha that deals with the creation of man after Sheish Yimei Bereishis. Because man is unique. He's included in Sheish Yimei Bereishis, yes, but he also goes beyond Sheish Yimei Bereishis into a separate parsha. Because he's different than the rest of the creation, totally different. Okay? The question basically in life, I mean, you could summarize, the question in life is really, is man going to be a gavra or a chafza? That's the question. That's basically the question of life. I mean, if a person, Donald Trump is a chafza. He's a chafza. He's not a gavra. Everything is predetermined. Everything he does is all determined. By some desire or another. That's it. His life is a waste in terms of just acting out things that are already there from before. I mean, there's no, he might as well not have lived. He's acting out a picture that's already been predetermined. Yes. But I want to show something. But in the end, you had a different point in the end. That's why we asked you to refine your question. It's a bunch of questions. That's the problem. You have to clear thinking. In other words, what you're presenting us with today is raw intuition. At least define that. Go ahead. There was your argument. The question is, in the case of the Isha that I gave, let me see if I got the question right. The question is, in the case of the Isha that I gave, so I set forth a human being that's making a decision. He's drawn with powerful emotions on one side, and rationally he sees that the reality is against what those emotions are asking him to do. So what does he do? So he follows the rationality. That's an act of Bechira. Okay, or he follows the emotions. Anyway. But the... okay, at least he gets to the point of Bechira. So now the question is, your question is, who says that that's so? Maybe this person is just what? It's just...
He is psychologically determined to follow the path of Kuffman, which is to come to this, to think it out, come to this, this is a destructive act, and I will not do this.
Yeah, but you're asking me something I was going to give you the answer I gave before. So you're saying to me, in other words, let me just make this thing clear. Maybe there's one point I have to make clear. The psychologist tells us, let's take a psychologist who in fact tells us such a thing, okay? He says to us, he says, look, whatever this guy did is based purely upon the strength, the relative strength of the various emotions, okay, and the components, how many there were and how strong they are, okay? All right. Now, that's how this person acted, okay? What I would ask psychologists is a simple thing. These ideas that you're telling me now about the situation, do they stem from the exact same type of source as this person you're talking about? Okay? You understand the question? These, what? If they do, then it's not really very worthwhile talking to you. But obviously you recognize that the ideas that you're telling me about this person comes from a different world, which explains this world. Right? So now you recognize that there is another world there outside of this world of emotions that you are talking about, right? Now that being the case, what right do you have to deny this person access to that world and his dilemma? You have access to this world, you're a special person. But this person doesn't have access to the world. Why is it everything can be explained in terms of a certain world except what you're saying? This would seem to me to be contradictory. So if what you're saying comes from a different world, then this person that you're talking about could also be in that world, and it could be drawn, as a matter of fact, between the two worlds. Okay, so then you cannot say anymore that it's a result of the strength and, of the instincts, because you recognize there's another world there. Okay? Once you show that you can make a choice with regard to the world of ideas, then you must say you can make a choice. Then you have no reason to stop it, because those are also determined by hormones. It's not just the actual hormones, but we know that the effect of certain types of thinking which are in line with certain desires also also bring about, if you want to speak in terms of hormones, the exact same thing. Okay? Fantasy and illusion is just as related to hormones as the actual event. It's not just a physical event. As a matter of fact, the human being is capable in his mind of conjuring up images which could be more entrancing than the actual physical. So once you say that I can make that decision, then you're going to have to say it down the line. If you want to be consistent, you can make the decision down the line. If you're going to either go, I don't know of any kind of determinist that split it off. Once you say that you can make a decision with regard to which idea you're going to embrace, you've got to say you can make a decision with regard to your mode of behavior as well. Okay? Why a determinist chooses determinism? I mean, he should just remain in question. He should say, look, I don't know. There's obviously no way to resolve if the person, without going into Occam's razor and sophisticated thinking, but just on a basic level, you say, well, why doesn't he just say, I don't know? What determines his determinism? That's the question, right? Yeah, so I mean, on a psychological plane, I can't say, because it depends on the individual. Although you can speak about certain psychological advantages. Jones does mention certain psychological advantages. Either way, he says there are advantages. Okay, a person likes to feel in control, so he doesn't want to believe in determinism. A person doesn't like to be bothered with all these burdens, so it's easier. It's much easier to say, you know, that's it, it's all determinism. Maybe that's what I do anyway. So there are psychological advantages either way. But on a philosophical plane, it means the difference, really, between saying that man is nothing more than another animal, or that man is something unique. That's a philosophical plane. That's what it is. It's the same. Now there are philosophical benefits in either position. I mean, in either position. I mean, I don't mean, when I say philosophical, I don't mean truly philosophical. I mean, in terms of a person's tendencies towards a way of life. If a person just believes he's just like another animal, so it frees him from any further philosophical imperfection. Whereas, you understand what I'm saying? So that's the advantage philosophically from that side. And on the other hand, there's a philosophical kind of ego that is advantageous on the other side. So I'm not going to, you know what I mean? That's why you can't really... the only thing you could say is that a person who makes a decision, it depends on the person. If he's on a lower level, you can't consider it a free choice between the two. You see, because he's right. The determinist, the one that's, in other words, we could say as follows. The one that is a determinist, it would seem, on the whole, you could say that he was determined to believe that way. That was determined. Because he never approached real free will. You understand what I mean? He never approached, because free will would mean that he'd have a free choice between the two ideas and would see the ideas clearly. So if he saw the ideas clearly, unless he had a tremendous pull, emotional pull to one side, then you could say he made a decision to be, it's a result of his free will to be a determinist. That doesn't mean he followed his emotions. But in a general way, you could say a determinist is really determined. Okay. The reason why on a college campus, a person who who believes in free will is considered religious, and the person who's determined is considered intellectual, is very simple. Because the religious person is the person that posits things that are in line with his crazy ego. You understand what I mean? And he refuses to... most religious people, the emotion that propels them is a certain type of megalomania, identification with God, which is really avodah zarah, basically. Okay, so that's why those people are not in reality. They deny reality, and they always will deny reality until they're forced. Like the Rav one time said that the difference between Christianity and Yahdus is on one plane is that the Christianity does not believe in activism, because Christianity believes in predestination. They believe in predestination. It sounds crazy, but that's what they believe. So therefore, he says that's against Yahdus, because Yahdus maintains that man initiates actions. Christianity, God helps him, but man has to initiate. God never initiates. You see, God doesn't initiate. You initiate. Christianity maintains the opposite. God always determines whether you're good or bad, and you can join in later. Okay? He says the difference is in terms of medicine. Because, you see, the Torah said thousands of years ago, when everybody believed that the person's sick, it's a sign that he has bad spirits, and this is predetermined, he's an evil man, he's supposed to die, and they believed in all kinds of magic and sorcery, all kinds of stuff. The Torah said, "Virapo yirape." You have to go to a physician who uses his mind, his intelligence, to cure the person. Christianity never accepted that premise. He says, and the Rav said, and even though today you see they have hospitals, he said, but that is because of a concession. That's a concession. It's a concession because you can't hold out against reality, so we have to concede. But you see, the Christian scientists didn't. You see, they didn't concede. They're really holding with the straight shita. You see. Now, since the religious person is an individual who posits, the average religious person, an individual, posits all these, who denies causality, so people say, well, over here he's just denying causality again. You see? Whereas the person who's the determinist, he sounds like the scientist, because he sounds like he's agreeing with causality and he's extending the concept of causality. See, religious, what's the definition of religion? I mean, definition of religion is the belief in a cause that is not to be found in reality. I know people say it's impossible to define religion. In my opinion, that's what religion is. Religion is belief in a cause and a type of causality that's not to be found in reality. Okay? So therefore, it's a positive. So therefore, the person that accepts determinism, he's considered to be the intelligent, the intelligentsia. Why? Because that's what science always had a battle with religion. Because science always showed that there, as the scientific causes progressed, so religion receded. Like a thunderstorm, the primitive man thinks a thunderstorm is because it's caused by his bad deeds. But once the scientist shows him what's caused by it, that vanishes. So the primitive religious man is one who is looking for a type of causality outside the realm of not to be seen from reality. Okay. Now, the one who's the determinist, he sounds like he's a great philosopher. He's a really scientific man, because he says everything's causality. But the only thing is, you see, so on the surface it looks that way, but in truth it's not so, because what Yada says is that there is a reality beyond this reality which is responsible for this reality, and your mind can tune you into that. Your intelligence, and once a person recognizes that, now his logic tells him you can't treat that world in the same way you treat the other world. You see, so while they are right on the superficial plane, you could explain why you have that breakdown, because they were primitive religion as opposed to. Just like the people that believed in creation were always considered unscientific, whereas the people that believed in the steady state universe were considered scientific. Why? Because if you believe in steady state, that means you believe in science. Steady state means everything can be explained. But if you believe in creation, you admit there's a point beyond which you can't go, can't be explained. So one person seems to be scientifically oriented, the other one seems to be religiously oriented, right? But it turns out that that's absurd. Because there's nothing that tells you in science, in the study of the created world, that there was no creation. That's an impossible deduction. You see? So it's just following the same pattern, and because you're doing the same pattern, so you're considered an intellectual. But that itself is not intellectual. The pattern should not be taken beyond its logical point. You see? But when people tend to classify others when they see... In other words, what they're doing is they're judging by accidents. They're saying the man of causality is science. Oh, he believes in causality of it? He's a scientist. You see? This person rejects causality over here? Oh, he's a religionist. You see? But that's just an accident that the scientist should not believe in causality. The scientist should believe in reason. And reason dictates that causality is applicable to a certain realm. But he shouldn't go beyond that realm. You see what I mean? That's the point. What I'm saying, maybe it sounds astounding to you that I'm saying this, that the, you know, that a person doesn't normally, an average person does not operate, does not experience free will. Okay? It sounds strange to you. I mean, I know when I thought about it, it occurred to me as being correct from a rational standpoint, but not come forth from God. So Rashi, Amar Biechen, Rashi explains, מיום שאמר הקדוש ברוך הוא ראי נסעתי לפניך היום עשה חיים ועשה טוב לא יוצא רוע וטוב מפיו אלא הרוע בו מאליה לא עושה רוע והטוב לא עושה טוב. That's what Chazal said. Pretty clear, isn't it? It was from the day that the in other words, from מפי עליון לא עושה צי הרוע, so that means it doesn't come from God. It comes from who? From you. Which day did that start from? From the day that God gave the Torah. It means that's when Bechira started. Okay, it doesn't mean literally, of course. Avram had Bechira, individuals, but it's the concept, which means to say, without knowledge, there's no Bechira. So you see that Bechira is not an everyday occurrence. So what is it then? Then, but without this, it's Mipi Elyon, which means a man, insofar as he has no knowledge, insofar as he doesn't experience himself as a govern, he can't make a choice, so that was already predetermined in the creation. So he's just following out of patterns. That's me, P.L.Y.O.N. So then that's not an act of man, it's an act of God. You say it's an act of God. Man doesn't have Bechira, so then his whole life is an act of God. Just like the tree. Okay? It's a Chazal. It's important to distinguish between free will and choice. Choice is when you decide you're going to eat breakfast or you're going to go jogging. I mean, it's choice. But free will is a different kind of phenomenon. So you have to make that distinction. And when the Rambam said that God took away from Paro free will, what does he mean? Does he mean choice or does he mean real free will? That's right. Now you're right. If the Rambam, when the Rambam says free will, if the Rambam means genuine free will, it would mean that Paro would have been in a position where his mind would have shown him clearly that Klal Yisrael are under God and he has no right to enslave them, and he would have made a decision based upon that. And God took away that ability from him, if that's what the Rambam means. I mean, then you have the problem, as I said before, there's a big problem of where do you see that God interferes with a human being's life and makes them worse? I mean, that's a problem, but that's a separate issue, separate area. That's if a person is that's very true. When you understand the concept of free will, you have to realize that if you don't have a knowledge of the concept, you're not going to have the experience either. You need a knowledge of the concept to be able to have the experience. So therefore, that's Reina Satla Fanachayom. That's what it means. Today, after Matantara, now you learn the concept, you understand it, now you can experience the free will. If you don't have the concept, you're not going to know what it is, you'll never experience it. You won't know what it is. Okay? I mean, it could be inadvertently. I mean, I can't say for sure, we'll never have it. I mean, that's a hard thing to say. But I mean, in a general way, he's not going to look for it. He can't identify it, and he won't find himself. He won't bring them to that level of free will. See, a person that knows about free will bring his experiential life to that level. When he sees an emotion is pulling, so he starts analyzing. He starts using because he knows that he's traveling towards that point of free will. A person that doesn't have that kind of knowledge is not going to be involved in it altogether. They'll just act emotionally. You know, that's it. The knowledge of free will is important in order to increase the experiences of free will. The difference between us and between the Christians is that the Christians say that when they sense guilt, that's sin. We're not so quick to say that. We say a person senses guilt, it should cause him to look into the thing and determine what it is, whether it really is a sin, or maybe the feeling of guilt comes from another source. On the contrary, feeling guilty when you're not supposed to is self-hate. but it's a signal. It's a signal. Whereas to the Christians, that is a kind of perceptor of reality. That's why one philosopher wrote, he says the Jews invented sin, and the Christians feel guilty about sin. That's what happens when that's the danger of taking over something that somebody else has without understanding. Yeah, it's a pasuk in the Torah. I tell you, it's a pasuk in the Torah. It's walking around guilty. Somebody asked me, walking around guilty is a sin. It's a pasuk in the Torah. Where's the pasuk? No. I could say it's a question. Pasuk. Tachas Hashem lo avadato asad Hashem melekecho besimcho v'tuv leivov meirov kol v'avadato asay vecho. Ron points out. He says, you see from the Torah that the worst thing is that because of that, God says, "I'll bring on the worst, don't you?" Why? Because even though he did everything right, but it wasn't besimcho v'tuv leivov. So you see, there's a mitzvah and there's a chiyuv to be in a state of simcha, not in a state of guilt. Yeah, the question is, can a man know whether he's involved? Will a man know he's involved? No, the Torah says dafki yes. Because that is the Torah maintains that man is capable. That's really, I explained one time what the Rambam says, that that's the isser of, what's the isser? The isser, the Rambam says that a person is not a ben olam abba if he puts down the chachamim. He puts down the chachamim. What's the lashon over there? No. Let's do it. It's makrish magidel. Makrish magidel. That's the Ram Menachos Tshuva. So it's considered not bikaris. He's not whatever. But the thing, why? I said, why? Well, there's no mitzvah. The Rambam is one that explained to us. There's no mitzvah to believe in a human being. There's no mitzvah. Even a navi. The Rambam says you don't have to. There's no mitzvah to believe in him. Okay. So we only follow him because he complies with the laws of the Torah. All right, it's true. But Ram says, yeah, it's true that you're not supposed to, you know, you're not supposed to choshen him. You're supposed to assume he's a tzaddik. But knowledge you don't really have, okay? 100% knowledge. Of course, if you had 100% knowledge, you couldn't have a Novi Sheker. So why does the Rambam say makhish magideho is such a terrible thing? So I explained the reason is because why is a person makrish magideh? What does it mean? He means to say that a human being cannot arrive at any kind of objective reality with his mind. He's always subjective. That's all. What is makrish? Makrish magideh is the movement of the upper person, the conservatives, or all those that basically say that why did this Tana hold this way? Because he had this experience. It means to say that there's no, what he means to say is that there's no objectivity for man. Of course, such a person always maintains that this statement that he made is very objective. And 100% only completely logical. But somehow or other he can escape this. But the first one to escape, essentially. But Yadus maintains exactly the opposite. That a person has the ability to perceive truth and to be guided by truth and to understand truth and to be completely in line with truth. Otherwise, you couldn't have a Masorah. That's why it's Makash Magidel. Because if you're going to say that man is incapable of truth, he's always going to twist it. He always has to twist it. So I can have a Masorah from generations to generations. One twist here, next twist down the line. By the time you finish, there's no Emes anymore. So that's why Makash Magidel is not Bikaris. But but since we say man is capable of knowing which part of his mind it's coming from. Is it coming from the intellectual part of his mind, or is it coming from the emotion? If he's not capable of doing that, we're not saying everyone is capable of doing that. You have to be, a person has to work on himself and know what reason is and know what chachm is and be able to recognize it and to study psychology and have knowledge of himself. He has to reach a certain point. It's not automatic. But it's a process that a person is capable of going through, and a goal and a level he's capable of achieving and attaining. I mean, that's what the Yad just maintains. If you don't maintain it, so a person can know when he does it, when he's involved in Bechira. He can know. He absolutely can know. I mean, you're absolutely right that man is born into a world where he's really an animal. The instinctual is Aristotle said the same thing as the others. Aristotle is machaven to the Torah. Aristotle says that why is it hard to get away from the pleasures? Why is a person captivated by the pleasures? So Aristotle said because it starts from early youth. He sensed. Good intuition. He sensed that that's the reason. The Chazal says the same thing. The Yetzirah has a head start, 13-year head start. So it is true. You're right. But it's like the Rambam says. The Rambam says nobody is born a tailor and nobody is born a bricklayer. These are things that have to be learned, acquired. And that's what the Rambam says. Perfection is the same thing in man. It's something that has to be acquired. Nobody is born with perfection. That's again the difference. Christianity maintains that there's you know, the innocent child, they're born, people are born without sin, and they're innocent and they're determined, predetermined that they're going to be virtuous. Well, what they call virtue. But anyways, according to Yadus, you're right. It's an acquisition. It's acquired. It's just like becoming a tailor. It's an art. And Chazal really have a very interesting thing. Chazal even go further, because Chazal say Barasi Yetzirah. Barasi Taratav. What does Chazal say? Chazal give a mashal. Mashal Adam. That he had a makkah on his flesh, and he went to the Rofe, and the Rofe says, I'll tell you what, you have this makkah, he says, take this salve, put it on. As long as you keep the salve on the makkah, you'll be fine. If you don't listen to me, take off the salve, you're going to be in pain. Okay? So Chazal say that's exactly what Torah is. The analogy is an unbelievable thing. What is the analogy? The analogy is that man is a functional phenomenon. What does it mean? What does it mean, functional? It means like this. It means that when you're involved in learning, that's when you're a man. The moment you stop, you're not a man anymore. That's what it means. It means it's just like the makkah with the sav. It means that when you stop learning, what happens? It means the whole dynamics of the mind is shifted into a twisted way. And the only way to have the dynamics running properly is to be involved in the world of chachmah. But even the greatest chacham, if he stops, that's it. It does not help. The Gemara says in the Dharm that the fact that a person was a Talmud Chacham in the past, when the Yetzirah has him, is not going to help him. The past will not help him. It will not help him. Ramses Gemara, that's right. We got the Shgacha. But the thing is that according to Yadus, a human being is really only a human being at the time, at a certain time, under certain conditions. He's a conditional existence. It's an amazing thing. Means to say that if he's not under the conditions of Chachma, then he's not at that moment he's not a human being. He's really reverts back to the animalistic. It's an amazing thing. That's why I one time tell you that the thing that they say over the name of the Gra, which when I first heard it, I thought it was crazy, but really later when I later understood it, I thought it makes a lot of sense. The Gra says you have to make an important decision. So I say you should be involve yourself in Chachma Satara and then make the decision right afterwards. That's based on this concept. Why? Because it means when a person is involved in the Chachma, the dynamics of his mind are different. And you see, it's true. It's true. When he's not involved in Chachma, the taivas keep building and the fantasies keep working on him. So he's not in a good position to make a decision because of the powerful influence of the emotional forces. But when a person is involved in Chachma, the energy is directed away. Directed away. And this is true. This is true psychoanalytically as well. That's why Freud said that many thinkers were saved from neuroses. Thinkers were saved from neuroses. Why? Because he says that thinkers channel away a lot of energy into the area of thought. So neuroses is from a buildup of tremendous buildup of energy, psychic energy that has no release. So he says that many great thinkers would have been neurotics if they weren't thinkers. But since they're thinkers, so they channel away the energy. So the Rama is the same idea. So the that's what the eitzah that they say over the name of the Gra is. That don't, if you want to make a decision, you make a decision when you have energy channeled away, you could see clearly with your mind. The mind is functioning better. But when you're in the grips of you're not learning, so the emotions have control over you, that's not a good time to try to make an objective decision. That was, yeah, that's right, Rabbi Meir is right. Yeah, ain omdin. That tefillah requires a certain state, and ain omdin is palal mitoch kavrosh alach psuka, and in some relationship to chachma. Yeah. That's right. You need the attitude. That's what the Gra said. There definitely is such a thing as a choice, as a bechira l'ra. We're talking about bechira l'tov, but there is a bechira l'ra, and it is some. It mean what it means. I mean, let me just to describe it. I mean, you'll. I can't do more than describe. It would be like people. I would say, to use a gross example, which might be inaccurate, but I'm just using it for the example itself. Like devil worship. You see, devil worship. There is a phenomenon in man that man can decide that he is going to subordinate himself to his passions and to his emotions. You see? You can make a bechira like that. There is, like the Greeks made that decision with regard to aesthetic beauty. That's what they said. Aesthetic beauty draws man. It's such a powerful thing that we can't deny it. We have to worship it. So you have to worship it. So that is a concept of a conscious bechira l'ra. Just give you an example. It's a yes, no. I mean, any yeah. See, the Greek said that is the Greek ideal of beauty, worshiping beauty, and that beauty is something which moves man to such a degree that you shouldn't fight it with your rationality and say that it's not rational. No. You should subordinate yourself to it and worship it. Make it an object of worship. That is an example of a bechira l'ra. You see, bechira l'ra. Most people. That's why most people they just. Now, it's not a shita. You can't say it's bechira. It's not a shita. You just follow the emotions. You know, it's animalistic. But there are shitas. There have been shitas where there were bechiras was used to make a choice, which was a choice for ra. It means the person. It mean and the same thing with like a devil worship kind of thing, where they say the emotions are too powerful, and therefore we must prostrate ourselves before these emotions and forget the rational, and we subordinate ourselves. That's a bechira l'ra. It's an example of bechira l'ra. It's an example of bechira l'ra. Yeah, hey, he's right. I mean, that has to exist. I just want to give you an example. So, you know, again, it's rare. You know, it's not common, because the common man doesn't, as we said before, doesn't, yeah. But there is such a thing. That's what it is. It's a shita. A bedafka shita. I can't fight my taivas. The taivas are too powerful. So therefore, what I say is man must give in to them and must just follow them. That's a shame. That's a rare thing. That's a very rare thing. Yeah, what Avi's mentioning is a very good point. That's by Esav, you can't. Esav was not an ordinary person. Esav made a bechira l'ra. Vayakom, vayelach, vayivazeh. All the Averis they did, he made a bechira l'ra. That's it. Can't do it anymore. It's too hard, too difficult. Can't fight the emotions. The thing for man to do is to give in.